From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. ...343 people were killed in Baltimore last year, most of them shot. In the wake of record homicides, two individuals are among those working on the street level to stop the killings. Erica Bridgeford of Baltimore Ceasefire shares how she remains persistent and hopeful in the face of tragedy. And James J.T. Timpson, Safe Streets Community Liaison Officer, discusses the future of that effort and what he thinks is behind the staggering number of homicides Baltimore saw in 2017.
We realize that what we're seeing is just culmination of years and years of misguidance, years and years of lack of resources, years and years of a whole bunch of different types of neglect that has all come to a head.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. 343 people were murdered in Baltimore last year. Most were killed by guns. Most were African American men. Such facts don't convey the emotional impact of this violence. Violence that traumatizes the family, friends, and neighbors of those killed. Last year's record number of murders comes 2 years after record murders in 2015. In a few minutes, we'll speak to James Timpson, a violence interrupter with the Safe Streets program. Fighting to turn the tide of homicide in the city is Erica Bridgeford, Director of Training for Community Mediation Maryland and a key organizer of Baltimore Ceasefire. Baltimore Ceasefire's motto is "Nobody kill anybody." The group calls for periods of peace during which they hold community events and vigils to remember homicide victims. The next ceasefire will be the first weekend in February, February 2nd through 4th. Erica Bridgeford, welcome back to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
When we got to the end of the year and it was clear that 2017 was going to be another record year of murder, what went through your mind?
I don't think I thought about it in that way because I literally grieve and honor each life that is lost. Back in May, probably, and definitely by November, when people were saying, wow, this is the worst it's ever been, it just dawned on me that worst means that it has to get better. So my focus has been on what are all the positive things that are going to make it better. I've been using this metaphor that it's like a red sea that looks like, you know, red ocean that looks like there's nothing we can do about it. But if we keep adding blue drops to that red ocean, eventually we're going to get a purple ocean and eventually we're going to get the blue ocean that we want to see. And so I'm focusing on the blue drops.
I think a lot of people wonder how you're able to do that. I mean, the last time you and I spoke was right before the August ceasefire. During that 72-hour truce, two people were shot and killed. During the November ceasefire, one person was shot and killed. And I think a lot of folks wonder, how do you persist in the face of these deaths?
Well, the main thing is I have to because I only have two choices, right? Because I experience a lot of the murder myself, their loved ones that belong to me personally. At times, I'm either going to be overtaken by the grief and sadness, or I'm going to use it, you know, like an alchemist, and I'm going to turn it into something else. And so I choose how I'm going to face it and who I decide to be in relation to it. And I understand that we did not get here overnight. And a lot has happened to Baltimore that got us to this place. And we can get ourselves out of this place. I don't just look at honoring the lives of people who were lost. But in that August ceasefire, the weekend before, six people were killed. And then that weekend saw, you know, the ceasefire weekend saw 67 hours with no murder. In the November ceasefire, literally 48 hours, nobody got shot. And that rarely ever happens in Baltimore. Even when people get killed, someone gets shot. And so that's amazing. So I can't only look at the horror. I have to also look at the light because it's the light that's going to eventually bring us out.
On the CSFAR website, there's a handout for volunteers that encourages people to ask their neighbors, what do you need in your life that will help make things better for you and your loved ones?
That's right.
Why is that an important question?
Because murder is a public health issue. People are not born murderers. I remember when drugs and guns suddenly showed up in my low-income neighborhood. And so I'm 45 years old, so I know my own story of what happened to the neighborhood I grew up in. And so I can see that it has a lot to do with people's despair and hopelessness and feelings of being unworthy. And so until we look at the murder epidemic as a public health issue, we're not going to heal it. And we have to heal the root causes of violence. We have to look at what are people going through, what has happened to people, and what do they need so that they can value their own lives and then the lives of other people.
That's Erica Bridgeford, a lead organizer with the group Baltimore Ceasefire, which is calling for a 72-hour truce the first weekend in February. This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast. Another one of Ceasefire's mottos is don't be numb. But what happens when people become numb to violence?
Well, I've learned that we at times need numbness, you know, for a little while just so we can keep waking up every morning and push through really hard times. But we have to be very careful that we don't stay numb and just become numb, because when we do, things that are horrific become our norm and we don't realize how horrific they are anymore. And so this thing about just us watching people die and die and die. We don't have post-traumatic stress syndrome in Baltimore. There's no post. We just stay in traumatic stress, and we don't even recognize it as trauma. And so we have to allow ourselves to feel this is a horrible thing, because when we see the horror, we can be motivated to do something to fix the horror.
Yeah, the pitch that Baltimore Ceasefire makes for peace is not aimed just at people who have committed violence, but everyone in the city.
Oh, absolutely, yes. People who have not themselves experienced violence are not free from the responsibility. America is a very violent society. We all have violent thoughts. We all say violent things to other people when we're angry. We all need to check how we respond in our own conflicts. It's not just gun violence. There's domestic violence. There's sexual assault. There's all kind of violence happening every day. And a lot of people benefit from the systems that maintain and uphold violence. And so those people also need to be held accountable. And so this is not just for people who participate or are impacted by violence. None of us can be any further than the least of us are. And so whatever you see as the least of us, you have to realize that you are also with them. And you can't wait until it touches you to decide that it's time for you to do something about it.
There are events throughout the rest of the month across the city for the public. What are you hoping to hear from people who attend?
I'm hoping just to keep hearing people waking up and remembering their own power, remembering that people do care when someone gets killed, that is not just another number, that we do surround families with love and light, those people's lives matter, and that people are finding their hope. I think we see our hopelessness enough. Our hopelessness gets reported and highlighted. And Baltimore needs, you know, a self-esteem boost and a love boost and a light boost. And so I'm hoping that people continue to celebrate life and celebrate one another.
You were recently named Marylander of the Year by the Baltimore Sun. What does it mean to you that people are following the work of Baltimore Ceasefire?
To me, it means that people are remembering who they are. I am a product of Baltimore. I am, on paper, statistically, I should not be someone who was able to do all of the things that I am doing as a Black female born with one hand, you know, in inner city West Baltimore. And so whatever people see in me is really just a reflection of themselves. And that is just really exciting to me.
How has this work changed you?
Oh, my goodness. It has changed me a lot, because I never expected to be a person sitting in murder spots almost every day. You know, the spiritual guru kind of person, just believing in the forces of other dimensions and bringing those dimensions to this plane, you know, to seal murder spots and keep darkness out and claim them as sacred ground. I never expected that so many people would band together. So it has humbled me a lot. It has, you know, I remember Captain Chesapeake my whole life saying, just be yourself, you know, and we tell children that all the time, but I'm literally able to see that if I just show up as myself, I can actually help to heal the world. And it inspires me that little black girls and people who were born with disabilities and people who come from the kinds of things that I come from, they can look at me and see, wow, like if she can be everything she wants to be, what can I possibly do with my life and on my journey? Who am I destined to be? And it just, like, it blesses my entire soul that I get to be myself and inspire people to be their whole selves as well.
Erica, thank you for sharing some of that with us. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you.
Erica Bridgeford is one of the organizers of Baltimore Ceasefire and the director of training for Community Mediation Maryland. Baltimore Ceasefire is calling for a truce next month, no murder, the first weekend in February. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we will link to their website as well as to the events they're holding this month. Quick break on the record. When we come back, what does James Timpson, a violence interrupter with the city's Safe Streets program, see as the bright spots after another year of record murders? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. There was a record number of homicides in Baltimore last year. 343 people were killed. And in 2015, there were 342. Today, we're talking with those who work to combat violence in Baltimore using a street-level approach. We just heard from Erica Bridgeford, key organizer of Baltimore Ceasefire. And joining us now is James J.T. Timpson, Safe Streets Community Liaison Officer. Safe Streets is an evidence-based public health approach to reducing gun violence. It implores people to stop shooting, start living. And since it started in 2007, it significantly reduced shootings and homicides in the neighborhoods where it's been implemented. Welcome to On the Record, JT.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Safe Streets takes kind of an unconventional approach to eradicating street violence. Tell us how it works.
Safe Streets is basically a public health approach to reducing homicides and shooting. So what we do is we basically have a team of what we call violence interrupters, who are really nothing more than credible messengers. They're guys who grew up in the neighborhoods in which they work, who usually have some sort of criminal past that allows them to be able to go back on the streets and do the type of work that they do, mediating street-level conflicts. Their job really is to identify and detect situations that could lead to homicide or non-fatal shootings and try to interrupt those situations and then offer the ladies and gentlemen that we work with out there different resources or different options to resolve their conflict.
In which neighborhoods is Safe Streets working?
So right now we're in four neighborhoods throughout Baltimore City. We're in Park Heights, the lower portion of Park Heights. We're in McElderry Park, East Baltimore. We're in Cherry Hill, and we're also in Sandtown, Winchester, which is West Baltimore.
Yeah. And how many mediations did Safe Streets facilitate in 2017?
At the last count, I'm sure it was over 900 mediations. I don't have the official number because our end-of-the-year report is actually in the process of being put together now. But I know this year was probably one of the highest years of mediations that we've done since I've been with the program, and that's been 3 years now.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around. Give me an example of what it means to de-escalate a conflict. What does a violence interrupter do?
So basically, again, they are from those communities. So they kind of understand the dynamic of the communities that they work in. Their job really is to be out there, to be out on the street at the times where things are most likely to happen. So the work hours are very unconventional. It's not a 9-to-5 job. You know, we have to be out there when we think things are going to happen. And their job really is to, like I said, it's really the health approach leads us to the 3-prong approach that the World Health Organization uses to treat epidemics. The first thing is we have to identify and detect. We have to interrupt and intervene. And then the third thing is to change behaviors and norms. And changing the behaviors and norms is oftentimes the hardest part of the work that we do. Because when you go into an environment where people are acting on what they've seen their whole lives, what they see every day walking out their door, it's kind of hard to tell them that their behavior is abnormal. But we try to stress the point that shooting and killing each other to resolve a conflict is not normal behavior. So really the guys and girls' jobs for the program is really to be out there to interrupt those situations and de-escalate any neighborhood arguments that they hear going on, something that could lead from the school back into the streets. Things lead from neighborhood to neighborhood. You know, just be out there to de-escalate and intervene in those situations as they occur.
And then part of that is also offer people services that they need?
Yes, absolutely. Part of the job that we understand is that when you ask somebody to put something down or to do something different, you have to be able to offer them solutions or resources or other alternatives to what it is you're asking them to give up. So our message when we go out is not about the activity that they're engaging in at the time. That's not really what we're focused on. The first thing we want to do is get them to resolve the conflict without resorting to violence. Once we're able to do that, then we have the conversation about doing things a little bit differently. Well, look, if you really want to have a job, you can't, you know, be out here on the corner selling drugs because it's not going to go hand in hand. You know, if you want to have a job, you know, you got to get your GED. We put together what we call, it's almost like a life plan for the individuals where we kind of sit down with them and figure out with them what it is that they want to do with their lives. Because what we realize is that the people out there, they are the real experts. They're the experts of their own lives. So it's our job to kind of journey with them to whatever point that it is that they feel like they want to get to and show them the options and the resources available along the way to help them get there.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with James J.T. Timpson, Safe Streets Community Liaison Officer, about changes in the organization for 2018 and plans to combat street violence. At the end of last year, Mayor Pugh announced her commitment to expanding Safe Streets to include 6 more neighborhoods, bringing the total to 10, if private funding can be secured. Do you have an idea of what those neighborhoods would be?
No, there's a process in which the neighborhoods are chosen. Usually we look at the top 25 percentile of violence. We look at the most violent neighborhoods in the city, and that's kind of how we come up with where we would potentially open new sites. But at this time, nothing has been determined. That process is still actually ongoing about where the actual sites will be.
And Mayor Pugh also relocated the administration of Safe Streets from the city's health department to its criminal justice office. Will that move affect what you do?
I think it's definitely something that we have to be open and willing to talk to the people who we deal with about, because what we need them to understand is that criminal justice does not mean only law enforcement. We feel like while Safe Streets is a public health approach, we don't want to lose focus on that. We hope that the move from to move to the mayor's office, we'll be able to open some doors for resources that our constituents desperately need out there.
As I mentioned, 2017 saw another homicide record for Baltimore, 343 people killed. Talk to us about how that looks from your perspective. Were you surprised at that level?
No, from the street level perspective, I don't think I would really be surprised or say I was surprised. We see the conditions of the neighborhoods that we work in. We see the condition of the people in the neighborhoods that we work in. I think the most disappointing part about it all is that 343 is not a number. You know, to us, those are actual people. Those are lives. Those are friends. Those are family members. Those are brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers. aunts, uncles. You know, those are people. So the number 343 doesn't ring as significantly to me as the fact that we continue to lose lives each and every day in this city. No matter what the number is, if we lose 200, that's too many. So I think, you know, our focus still remains the same because ultimately the goal is to reduce the homicides and shootings no matter what the number is.
You say you see the people on the street, you see the people in the community, you weren't really surprised. So how and why is that happening? Because it's still happening.
Again, we see the conditions it's a survival time mentality for a lot of people out there on the streets. And that causes really negative behavior to come to the forefront. So we realize that what we're seeing is just a culmination of just years and years of misguidance, years and years of lack of resources, years and years of a whole bunch of different types of neglect that has all come to a head. Because what we're seeing is that these offenders are younger and younger. You know, we're starting to see a lot of young kids getting involved in this type of criminal activity. And the goal is to be able to pull them out of that before it's too late, before they either lose their lives or they become incarcerated. And we just can't afford to let our generation continue to go down that path. So when I say I'm not surprised, it's really because we've seen what when things are let go for so long or not paid attention to for so long, this is the result. And it's unfortunate. And we have to take our place in these neighborhoods and really reclaim our streets.
So has Safe Streets' approach altered because of this high level of homicide?
I would say a little bit. The model remains the same. Again, you know, it's a public health approach. But what I will say is that it's highlighted the need or the lack thereof or the resources that we've had available to us. What we realize is that we can't do it all, and we can't do it all by ourselves. So I think in 2018, the focus will be being more open to partnerships and partnering with other agencies or other organizations doing similar work so that we can all get the best results for the city of Baltimore. It's not about who gets the credit at the end of the day. We just want the city to change and we want the numbers to go down.
How does your staff stay motivated to do this? It's hard work when the crime level, the homicide level in particular, is where it is.
Absolutely. Self-care is really important.
And that means what?
That means that we have probably 2016 going into 17, what we realized is that as a program, we weren't doing a good job of taking care of each other. And that means that we weren't noticing the signs of our own people when they were suffering from burnout or when the job just became too much. Because the reality of it is that these are our families and friends that we're out here mediating conflicts with. And these are our families and friends that wind up dead or wind up shot or wind up seriously hurt. That takes a toll. And when you ignore that or don't pay attention to it, or you think that it really doesn't affect you, then that's a dangerous place to be in. So what we had to do was realize that self-care was really important because hurt people hurt people. And if our job is to heal people, then we have to start the healing process with ourselves. So, you know, just taking time and understanding that allowing a safe place for staff to be vulnerable about what it is that they're feeling. You're feeling upset about something that happened, one of your friends got shot or, you know, because it happens all the time. You know, we have to be able to allow them to have a safe space where they can come, feel vulnerable, and get the type of support and backup that they need to really be able to work through some of these situations.
Were there any bright spots amid all this?
Absolutely. There are bright spots every day. we don't look at what people deem as a crisis. They deem this, the violence, as a crisis. We don't. We look at it as an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to grow as a program. It's an opportunity for us to grow as a city. It's an opportunity for the neighborhoods to finally get resources and different things that they need to grow as neighborhoods. So the bright spot is the hope that we hold on to, that each and every day when I see that kid I talked to yesterday about doing something different and today he does something different, that's enough to motivate me to keep pushing. Because now he's giving me, he doesn't even know it, he's giving me motivation to keep doing what I do every day because I realize it does make a difference at the end of the day. It does. And we have to be willing to take our place in our neighborhoods and make them better and safer. And I just think that hope is the bright spot. That hope is what causes us to get up every day and keep doing the job because we know that it makes a difference at the end of the day. Saving one life is one less life lost. So it needs, we'd like to be many more, but one at a time. Sometimes it's one at a time.
I hope there are many bright spots this year. Thank you for talking to us. Thanks.
Thank you.
James J.T. Timpson is Safe Streets Community Liaison Officer, talking about what might be ahead for Safe Streets in 2018. Earlier, we spoke with Erica Bridgeford of Baltimore Ceasefire. We have information about both organizations and how you might become involved at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.